The following programming is sponsored by Carol Captus Holloway. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
After a busy holiday weekend, I hope you're all stuffed and eating plenty of leftovers. Maybe you should be done with them by now. You are listening to Tell Me More with Carol Holloway. We are live right now on Facebook. We are live at the studio on the podcast at 860 AM as well. That's the radio station, as well as on the podcast website at WWDB. We're also live on Odyssey. You can ask Alexa to turn us on and she'll listen to us too. And if you have any questions, you can ask them on Facebook. You can also instant message me at Tell Me More on Instagram and Facebook. So, okay, all the particulars are out of the way. If you're on Facebook right now, you'll see that I have a guest standing by to come on, but I'll tell you about him in just a second. In the second half of our show, pretty much towards the end, we are going to have one of my favorite guests coming back on. Tech trends expert, gaming fanatic Scott Steinberg is going to be joining us to help you pick out the best game for your gamers for the holiday. So I just have to get that in there first, but I love when I do book interviews, and I have an amazing author here to join us. So for all of you out there that are just tuning in, I have Nelson Cover here. He is the author of All Mortal Greatness, and it is a novel that is filled with humor and larger-than-life characters, in addition to real-world issues that we deal with every day, and it explores the concepts of animation and greatness, and what can happen when they're all embraced by the wrong people. Sounds like stuff that's going on. Welcome to the show, Nelson.
Thank you. So delighted to be here.
So delighted to have you. Before we get into this book, which is a series of three, but I'm going to ask you why this one could be a standalone book in a couple minutes. But tell our listeners a little bit about your history before you started writing.
Well, I've always been interested in writing. In fact, I intended to be an author. You may know how life goes. But I even have a degree in creative writing. But life has a way of getting in the way of all that. And for 40 years, I was a professional fundraiser. And of course, I wrote during that time, both professionally and for my own enjoyment. And when I retired in 2013, I thought, OK, now's the time. And I'm pleased to have four novels and a collection of short stories on Amazon and elsewhere. Sky's the limit as far as I'm concerned.
Wow. It's amazing. I love to ask that question of people, how they decided to take on writing. And it's funny that you said that you always wanted to do that, because that's something that's deep down inside of me to want to write. And I've written things in the past, but never done anything with it. But before, so that's just my little sidekick there. So All Mortal Greatness is an amazing novel. But before we get into the book and the characters and all that is happening with the book, and I want to know why, what inspired you to write this particular book as well as the whole series, you have some coveted awards for this book. So I want to put that up front, because I want our listeners to know that, like, this is an award-winning book. You won the Literary Titan Book Award. Is that's from Amazon?
No, it's just an independent award.
Independent award.
Yes.
And that's for books that have astounded and amazed the judges with unique writing styles and vivid worlds and complex characters and original ideas. And that comes from Thomas Anderson, the editor-in-chief.
Yes.
And he says that these books deserve extraordinary praise, and we are proud to acknowledge the hard work, dedication, and imagination of these talented authors. I have to read it as I see it in front of me. but also, you were recently named the Firebird Books Awards Crime Fiction. Help me out with that. Let me see if I can say that. Firebird Books Awards for Crime Fiction.
Yes.
Okay. So how did it feel to get those awards?
I'll be honest. My publicist submitted these to these contests, and I frankly didn't know what to make of that initially. So he submitted the novel, The Mystery, to five different awards, and I won in all five.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm as surprised as anyone else might be, but it's really helpful and validating, obviously, to be awarded. And mostly it's in thriller, crime fiction genres. And but I'll take it. It's just fine.
I love it. Well, I love thrillers. I love mystery and crime novels. They kind of excite me. And I tend to gravitate towards them on television as well, if I'm going to watch some television. And yours is a series of books. So let me just mention the first two books, Dance by the Light of the Moon and From the Mist of Wickedness. Those are the first two books. Do I have them right?
Yes. The first one is another novel about a group of 30-somethings who run into very bad problems in the Sir Francis Drake Channel near the BVI. And From the Mist of Wickedness is the beginning of what I call the Sessions University series, which is three novels about misadventures at Sessions Universities with three key characters who form a triumvirate to get to the bottom of them.
Now, I have to be honest, did not read the other two novels. So you have to tell me, do all of these characters, particularly Thomas Simpson, they run through all three books?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So what inspired you to write a third?
Well, you know, I'd finished the second and gotten good reviews and was very happy with myself. But my characters weren't. My characters kept bothering me. And this is the strange thing about creativity and writing. We're not normal people. I'll admit it.
It's true.
But characters will suddenly voice opinions, and I got the very strong feeling for these guys would show up with dialogue from scenes, and I'm going, okay, don't pester me anymore. I'll figure out a plot. And the key with this book, this last book, was figuring out who the villain was. And once that happened, the whole thing fell into place. These three characters are the narrator, Thomas Simpson, who is now in the third novel, the executive director of the Chairman of the Board's Foundation, his best friend, a giant of a human, best friend of his family, is Zoltan Vastag, who is a immunology research scientist at the medical center, and the chairman of the board, a fellow named Mark Berger, who is a very erstwhile, very far-sighted, and very obscene sometimes character. These three idiosyncratic guys get together and they make a great team. And they have to be a great team to solve some of the problems that they're confronted with.
Wow. So definitely a reason to carry on with that. Now, this book is this book reflective of your own time spent at university?
Well, to some small degree. I ran a business. My last 30 years in the business was as president, founder of my own consulting company. And as part of that, we had university and college clients, and educational organizations, as well. I worked for not only a university, but for a think tank in Washington, D.C., for a medical center in Chicago, et cetera. So I had a vast number of experiences that gave me some background for writing these books, hopefully convincingly.
So let's talk a little bit about your characters and your main character, Thomas Simpson.
Yeah.
When we bring him into the third series, he is at the beginning of a new job.
Right.
And the university, let me make sure I have all my facts right. A prominent member of the university's administration is murdered.
That's correct.
Kind of how we get into this third book.
It, just as everything seems to be returning to normal from the last 2 years and tragedies, in one afternoon, the admissions department is ransomware attacked, and the acting president, walking along the university drive going home, is assassinated by a drone. Now, these two instances connected?
Interesting.
Why? The drone drops a ghost gun, which, you know, is a plastic 3D printed gun. It's untraceable at this person's feet, obviously making a statement. But what is that statement? And for a while, everybody's completely in the dark, and our three heroes here get together, and they have a notion about who this is. But that notion is based on the problems the university has had in the past, major scandal that was swept under the rug. And, of course, the police and the authorities don't know about this, so they don't believe. They go and suggest this fellow to the authorities, and the authorities just discount it. They think this fellow's father died of suicide, and actually he was murdered. So they have to take it on themselves to find out how to solve this.
Good murder mystery, for sure. So why do we call this a standalone book, even though it's part of a series?
Because it refers to the standalone means you can read it just without having read the other two books.
Okay.
And the background is in there in the first couple chapters. So you're well-versed with what's happened in the past, and therefore you can read this without having the burden of having to read the first two books. My hope is, of course, if you read this book and you're so interested, that you go back to the first two.
I'm gonna go back
but
and
that
read.
May just be me.
No. I think that's a lot of people when you read a book that if there's a series. I love to read in the series, but because this is the book that was approached to me and to meet you and talk to you about All Mortal Greatness, I thought it was really, it was good. I mean, I wouldn't have known that there were previous books until I started to.
Thank you. That's exactly what I wanted. Yeah.
So here's what I find really ironic about your book. It seems like today's times are in that book. I mean, drones dropping, being able to kill people and the money and the multi-billionaires and the murder mysteries and the secrets and all of that stuff. It's like happening in real time.
Thank you.
It's amazing. So one thing that I wanted to know is what technology did you research when you were writing this book? Drones,
well,
obviously.
I absorbed everything about drones and drone companies. The field is moving so rapidly. Just look at the Ukraine. They're inventing new methods of drone warfare almost monthly.
Yes.
So I thought about that a lot, and it occurred to me that this villain, whose background is in part of it is in aerotechnology and drones, he basically has the wherewithal and the smarts and capacity to build his own drones. So once I knew that, then I was able to help move the story along by his progress with making drones. And their progress at trying to stop him. And also, I should mention, I did a lot of research on the FBI because we have an FBI character who comes in about the last third of the book that in many ways carries that last third. I didn't know he was going to exist until later.
But he appeared. That's interesting. Because here we are in today's times, the FBI is a big focus within our government.
Exactly.
And we have this main character here, as well as other things that seem to run some parallels. Well,
their culture is very, very interesting, and their capacities are very, very interesting, and not generally known, I think, in the general public. We see all the political issues. What we don't understand is their capability issues.
Right, which is why I love murder, mystery, crime-solving books.
Exactly.
Referring to what happens within the confines of government. And a university falls within that confines because of the rules and regulations and things that they have to do.
You're so right. Today's university, unfortunately, is just part of the military-industrial research complex. And they're subject to all the different ambitions and temptations and as any corporation, as you're seeing, might be. And yet corporations, foundations, et cetera, cause organizations even, have overarching authorities. Universities essentially do not. So the administrations are there for operations and boards are there for policy. And if the administration wants to do something that's untoward, the board's not going to know about it unless there's a whistleblower somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. And whistleblowers. Oh my goodness. And so many have been killed.
Yeah, exactly.
So your book is titled All Mortal Greatness. So how would you define greatness?
Well, greatness is, we all see it in society. Anybody who has leading a major organization, whether it be military cause, a university, business, et cetera, who is at a top position and has great media coverage and has messages and is clearly seen as a key leader. That in today's world is greatness. Is it good greatness or bad greatness? Well, we find out as we go along.
Well, and we're going to find out. I mean, I find it so ironic that your book does seem to have some parallels with what's going on in the world today. So do you believe that there are people who are able and willing to fight corruption? Because we can take that right into real times. I mean, your characters do. But here we are in real life. What's your thought on that?
You know, they're whistleblowers every day, and they thank God our society has people that whose conscience is greater than their dutifulness, and when they see something wrong in their organization, they go public or leak it, because otherwise it's going to be a corruption that continues. In Florida recently, we had a whistleblower in the Department of Environmental Protection blew the whistle on the fact that there was a plan put together to put golf courses in some of Florida's key state parks, and it was being shoved, in a very truncated period into the public domain. Well, that helped stop it. Right there. So you see it every day that some people just say, no, I'm not going to put up with this. This is wrong. And they let the public know, and the public wants to know. That's we have a good conscience in this country. We want to see right.
We
don't want cover-ups, obviously.
Right. I agree with you. And that's what makes your book so much fun. Because you really tackle a lot of that corruption, I guess you could say, that's happening, and whistleblowers, and bringing it to in today's misdeeds, so many, bringing it into today's parallel universe, you know, with what's happening today as in real time, as opposed to a book that you wrote. Did you even have a clue that they would be parallel?
Yes. I mean, first of all, if you take an existing university or college or whatever, and you write fictional things about it, you're going to get sued. So, but there's really a more important point here, which is, in my experience, all the current turmoil at colleges, and I look at the turmoil as being democratic and push-pull and will result in better policy, one hopes. But beyond that, there's a lot going wrong. And people seem to accept the colleges and universities, particularly universities, as being part of the corporate structure, and they don't understand that a lot of secret stuff is going on at our universities. Hopefully, some of it could be good research. But for instance, there's sponsored research at many universities, a very big item. That's secret. Nobody knows what that's about. That's government contracts, military contracts, scientific contracts, maybe foreign government contracts. We don't know. But the bottom line is, there's all this stuff taking place. Is it good or is it bad? It's not vetted anywhere. Individual professors have contracts with the same kind of entities. Who knows about them? Sometimes I can concur. I can tell you, not even the own university. I remember when I was at the medical complex that I work for, that the dean went in to call on a foundation and discovered one of the professors had been there shilling for a grant the week before and had not cleared it with the dean. So, I mean, it's just this kind of atmosphere where things go on and happen that I've seen way too much of. And this is not to say that most universities, colleges, et cetera, are not really good and have the best interests of their constituents at heart. But occasionally, when there's power that leads to ambition and greed, which leads to corruption. And that's the point I want to make, that this can go on and nobody knows the better of it.
So, Nelson, I take it from the book and what you're saying out loud is that this happens every day. We don't know about it in the public realm of things. And even though your book is a mystery thriller that is fiction, it seems to be based on a lot of fact. Am I right about that?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. I'll tell you how the first book came about, and not in too long a term. But I wrote a short story in 2014 after I'd written my first novel. And that you write short stories to kind of find out what you want to do next. And these two characters, these two professors, Zoltan and Thomas, appeared. And I wrote a short story about them. It just flowed. And I finished it. I went, geez, these guys are dynamic. They work great together. Their dialogue, the family dynamics, everything about this works. And I was so compelled. I said, I've got to find a larger platform for them. So this is how the From the Midst of Wickedness came about. I thought back in my career and eventually realized there were two scandals, one at a university, one at a policy organization that I was aware of, that if combined could put together a very nefarious plot, for this first novel. And that's how I proceeded. And that's how From the Midst of Wickedness came into being.
Wow. So you have three characters in here. How did you create these three characters? What came into your head, and are any of them based on you?
No.
Okay.
Thankfully.
Just checking.
They would have been so boring.
Finding elements of ourselves in our characters.
Yeah. No, these guys invented themselves, and I can't explain that process. It's just a certain in some cases, particularly Mark Berger, is an amalgam of physical appearance of somebody I'm actually very close to. But the personality is completely, utterly, and background is completely and utterly different. I just think his appearance is very arresting and very interesting and fit the character that I invented and fit his personality. But Thomas and Zoltan just came out of the blue, and they work so well together because Thomas is your narrator, and he's a guy who knows everything and is very savvy, but can't figure himself out. Zoltan is a absolute rapscallion truth teller, and he's just politically unbelievably incorrect all the time, and it's hilarious in parts. So the two of them are very close, and then Mark Berger comes along, and they decide they like each other. And Mark was a character from my first novel, Dance by the Light of the Moon. I moved him forward. He was a very obnoxious character then. I moved him forward 15 years from a currency trader into a billionaire and made him chairman of the board. And then those three guys got together. And so I had three characters I'm in love with interacting. And it just, for an hour and a half, 3 days a week, 5 days a week, I have a great time working with these guys. They are really terrific.
So it tells me there's going to be a fourth.
it's actually underway.
It's going to be.
We have a president. We have these guys. We have a big problem. I haven't figured out who the villain is, and that's maybe the most important thing. I've got some good ideas, but it hasn't gelled yet. So we'll see how that happens.
So Greedy Harp from Amazon's top 100 Hall of Famers reviewer gave you 5 stars. He said, microscopic attention to detail, a keen sense of suspense, and sidebars of medical university criminology information make this a resounding success. Watch this author rise. Highly recommended. I highly recommend. Did you do research in criminology to make sure that you had things in a good perspective?
Not so much. But the process, there's a logical process that's followed anytime you have law enforcement involved. and that unfortunately I know. But the FBI was what I really researched, because they have a whole different policy and a whole different way of reacting. Yet they're subject to the whims, unfortunately, as we all well know, of the political situation and political team that exists at that particular time. Mm-hmm. In this case, the Secretary of State is involved with the university for any number of reasons, which are very complex. She gets wind of what's going on, and she, more or less, the FBI, who had ignored the whole problem, is suddenly mm-hmm. on site. And guess what? So somebody pulled some strings. So wow. I needed to understand how they worked, and I need to understand what their capacities might be and how they would interact. And it just flowed. If you do enough research, it feels like second nature.
Wow, that's amazing. The characters are awesome. They definitely have their own unique personalities. So I wanted to ask you a question. Why do you believe that ambition results in bad outcomes? Because we're kind of seeing that in the real world right now.
We do.
Overly ambitious people that think that they're above and beyond.
Yeah. Do you ever get the feeling that in the past we all wanted to play by the rules? And in today's world, everybody seems to want to take advantage of them.
Yes.
So that's part of the perception, there. But the bottom line is most of these institutions, and I include board members as well as administration, those who care more about the welfare of their audience, the students and or parents, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, care more about the university doing its job in education before they care about themselves. There are many good people out there, and that is their personality and their love of the institution. And that's why we have such great institutions in this country. But occasionally we find that some people see opportunity to be greedy and, mm-hmm. and concoct schemes. This is in the second novel, A Matter of Circumstance. This is what happens with the new president, who's a colleague of the first president, and that helps him get the appointment. And he just has no moral compass whatsoever. And it quickly comes, his administration quickly comes apart. But you have to see what nastiness he gets into. So it's you get the wrong people, wrong personality. They could be the most skilled people in the world. The most capable, but if they have no moral compass, you're in trouble as an institution.
Right. Well, don't you feel that we're that way in the world right now? Because yes. It seems to me that there's so many people that have lost their moral compass. They're only ambitious for themselves and lining their own pockets. And I kind of refer that back to our government because I think a lot of people are afraid. And that's why they need to read your book. Because there's so many parallels, there's so many similarities between the university and the whistleblowers and the greed and the ambition and all of that and the tragedy that happens. And I feel like it's happening in our real world right now, even though this is fiction. Oh, my goodness. You must be, I don't want to say pleasantly happy.
No.
That's not the right thing to say. No. But you must be happy that the book is getting a message across translates into real world, real time activities. Yeah. And it's almost scary to an effect.
One of the things that I try in these books to accomplish, and I'm pleased to say that the reviews seem to underline that I've been successful, is to have the characters and their family situations and everything about them be as intriguing as the mystery itself, so that you're just not dealing with these, macho cardboard kind of people or nice babes walking around. You're really dealing with a lot of different issues, both familial and university. But, one of the things that I find, and frankly, it's resonated with me more as I go along, is that evil acts have a life of their own and they last forever in perpetuity. And so what we're seeing when things go wrong with our country and with our universities is that one act can last maybe a lifetime, but certainly destroys families, destroys friendships, destroys loyalty, and leads to terrible morale. So, you know, little evil goes a long, long way. And that becomes more apparent as I go along.
So, you know, I've done and interviewed so many wonderful authors on this show, and yours is another one of those great books that looks like it could be a series on like Netflix or Hulu or something. It really has.
We only wish.
Yeah. Well, hopefully somebody will stand up and listen after all these great reviews you've gotten for your book. And
thank you so much.
Next one, because it has all of that murder mystery suspense and it gives you all that stuff that we embrace the wrong people for.
Yeah, I should mention that there's a very strong major female characters that are all part of this plot, particularly the Secretary of State, who is involved in this book. So
wow,
yeah,
you're ahead of your time a bit. You have written, this is book number four. You're working on book number five, which is, and three of those. So this is the third in your series.
In the Sessions University series, correct?
Yes, in the Sessions University series, and then your short stories. You're going to continue to write. Do you have other ideas for different novels, or will you continue on the path of your character, Thomas Simpson?
Well, the fourth is underway in the Sessions University series. I do have another novel out there that I've more or less shelved, and that happens because I can't quite figure out where to go. I've written the first three or four chapters. I've written some later chapters, but I have a major issue that I've got to deal with, and it hasn't come to me yet. I'm beginning to see a way. So there may be a fifth novel that is, or a fourth, sixth novel that is a whole different set of characters, whole different set of circumstances.
Nelson, how long did it take you to write your first novel?
3 years.
Okay. So it was constantly a work in progress?
Yes. It isn't the writing, it's the rewriting. I probably have written, particularly in this last book, I probably rewrote that first chapter 15, 20 times. You go back and it's just still not right.
How did you know when it was right? Is it a gut feeling? Is it when somebody
It's your own instinct. You read it. And I had a little scene in there that was, I thought was funny. And the more I read it, I'm going, that's not funny. So cut that out. Took the first chapter and made it into two separate chapters. That was necessary. But when I finally got it, I was really pleased with the beginning of the book because it involves a scene where all these other dynamics come into play, even as Thomas is waiting for Mark Berger to arrive in the elevator. And so you get a lot of background in there in a very short amount of time, fairly seamlessly. I was really pleased with that, but it took forever to get it right. But when it's right, you know it's right. And I don't send my novels out to read until they're finished.
Okay.
And I have readers, a number of readers, who I then send it to, and they'll have their reactions. But generally, it's complete and it's done. It needs proofing. Okay. But if I can't make it right, somebody else is just going to screw everything up. I don't need second opinions. My opinion is what counts.
You said from the beginning you always wanted to be an author. You always had it in you. Did you feel 3 years to do your first one?
That was the second one.
That was the second one. I'm sorry.
The first ones lay in my drawer for about a decade or two.
Oh my goodness.
Three quarters finished. That's what happens when you own your own business.
Okay.
You can never get to it.
But you took the leap and you did it. So what do you tell to some of our young authors out there or people like myself that, you know, and I know there's tons of people like me that they want to write something. They have drafts. They have things. And they're like, there's a story here. I know there's a story here. Yeah. What do you say to those young or older people that have that same drive to want to be recognized as an author?
In a phrase, never give up the dream. Never give it up. Now, as an illustration, I had a book this is something that was close that reflected experience we had. Characters changed, topography, I mean, not topography, but the itinerary changed, et cetera. But we'd had this misadventure, and I always thought that would be a great novel. And I got about three quarters of the way through. But I just couldn't make it. Just too much life going on, too much business, too much everything. And I'd work on it maybe a couple times a year. Mm-hmm. When I retired, I have a dear friend in England who I've known forever. That mean forever meaning she typed my short stories in college. And I was a medical publisher with her husband. And she basically came to me and said, if you don't finish this novel, you will never forgive yourself. And so I sat down with it upon retirement. And with 4 months, I'd finished it. It's the uninterrupted space. All of a sudden, everything that was missing came together. And it's not a very long novel, but it all worked. So I was really thrilled by that. And then I mentioned how the other one came about. And so don't ever give up your dream.
I love that.
Don't even be discouraged. Just say, I'm going to do it at a certain time. And retirement is a whole lot better time than when you're working, although there have been many examples of authors who worked but not owning their own company. So don't own your own company either. Might be a good advice too.
Yes, that's a hard thing to do. Both of us coughing at the same time. Your book is available on Amazon. Very easy to find if you want to read any of the reviews. It's right there, people. It makes a great gift if you have anybody in your family who is not only an author, but loves suspense and drama and a little bit of comedy in there as well, a little bit of humor. Awesome book. Anywhere else we can find the book? Are you in bookstores?
Yes. We're Barnes & Noble, et cetera. Any bookstore, online bookstore. There's also a website, which is www.allmortalgreatness.com. Awesome. And from there, you can either directly purchase the book, but you'll get to see some of these, your interview will be on it, some of the press releases and reviews of the book, et cetera. So feel free to go there first and read the reviews, because I hope you're as pleased as I am. Maybe not, but you'll like it.
No. Don't say maybe not. It's a good book. It's very suspenseful. It keeps you on the edge of your seat. My husband hates when I pick up books, because once I pick up a book and I like it, he cannot talk to me. So I highly encourage people to look for All Mortal Greatness. And that is a novel in a series of three, but it is a standalone book by Nelson Cover, who has been our guest today. Nelson, I'm inviting you back when you get the next in the series done to bring us up to date.
Thank you so much, Carol.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I love that we have the opportunity to have you on board. So I really appreciate your time. And I have to let my listeners know that we got to let you go, because I have to take a commercial break and get my other little segment in there. But like I said, you are always welcome back. Can you give that website again?
www.allmortalgreatness.com.
All right. Nelson Cover, thank you so much for joining us today. You're welcome to stay on board, but it might be a little bit boring as we talk. I'm not a gamer, so this is going to be a fun segment not so fun for me.
Neither am I, but yeah. Enough gaming with writing your own novels.
Exactly. Well, thank you for joining us. Listeners, we're going to take a quick commercial break. You have been listening to Tell Me More with Carol Holloway, and our co-host, All Mortal Greatness, Nelson Cover, has been here to talk about his book. We will be right back. Thank you for listening.
Hi, this is Carol Holloway from Home Improvement Fix and Facts. Listen to me live every Tuesday morning from 8 to 9 right here at WWDB. And if you can't listen live, make sure you go to WWDBAM.com and listen to my podcast. Each week, we will give you great ideas on how to fix your home and some facts on how to put it all together. In the middle of our streets, our house.
Hello, this is Erin, and I have a very important message. If you or a loved one is suffering with any sort of crisis, there is no need to do it alone. Dial the 988 Suicide and Crisis Hotline, where trained professionals will handle your case and get you the help you need any day, anytime. All reports are fully confidential. Dial 988, and a responder will do everything they can to assist you. Remember, if you see something, say something. You may just be saving someone's life. Remember, 988 for the Suicide and Crisis Hotline.
Hey, Philadelphia homeowners. To build for looks and durability, side your home with LP SmartSide Expert Finish Trim and Siding, now available in brushed smooth texture. Available in 16 versatile colors, LP SmartSide Expert Finish products will help you create a gorgeous, longer-lasting dream home. That's the beauty of brushed smooth. Learn more about LP SmartSide Expert Finish products in brushed smooth texture at lpcorp.com/philly siding. That's lpcorp.com/philly siding.
Gamers out there, I am not. I just can't seem to get it all together. But with the holidays right around the corner, it's really hard to pick the perfect game for somebody. And Star Wars is one of the best things out there right now, no matter if it's Legos or the movies or gaming. And we're lucky to have been able to pre-record this segment because I had my wonderful author on. I couldn't do them both at the same time. So we pre-recorded a segment. So I don't know how they're going to do it at the studio, if they're just going to keep me on or if we're just going to listen. But trends expert and futurist Scott Steinberg is one of today's most celebrated technology, gaming, pop culture leaders, as seen in like 800 plus media outlets from CNN and the New York Times to USA Today. He's also a best-selling author of 30 books, including Think Like a Futurist and The Modern Parent's Guide to Kids and Video Games. And he has served as a consumer trends advisor and industry consultant for over 2,500 leading brands and a long life fan of fantasy and science fiction for the past 25 years. He should have listened to my previous interview and he should read that book. And he is also popular. He's also a popular TV and radio commentator. And it has been a pleasure to talk to him in the past. And he has also had the pleasure of professionally reviewing and writing about literally thousands of gadgets and games. Now, in the past, I have known Scott for years. It's been a while, but he used to bring all kinds of gadgets to me when I had a television show. And we had the opportunity to connect again and talk about what the big trend is right now for, you know, all of you people out there that want to know what's the hottest game of this season right now and trying to get it into your wish list and stocking for your kids or your whoever your gamer is in your house. Let's get started and bring Scott on board. Like I said, this was pre-recorded, so I don't know what you're doing at the studio while we're running this segment. But Scott's on board. Let's bring him on and let's talk to what is the hottest game right now.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. It's so good to talk to you. I haven't talked to you since last year, I think.
Yeah. It seems like ages, especially in the tech world where light years can pass in months.
Yeah, well, speaking of light years, oh my goodness, I can't believe you said that. It's estimated that 90.6 million Americans play video games between the ages of 5 and 90. I am not one of them.
Well, you're one of the few remaining holdouts because, like you were getting at, it's adults, it's kids. In fact, the average age of a video game player is about 36 years old now. So consider yourself welcome in the crowd if you'd like to join.
Yes, I never really did, but I know a lot of our listeners do, and I know we have some Star Wars fanatics out there and a lot of gamers. So what's going on in the gaming industry for gifts this year?
So we got a lot of great options and a lot of great trends to cover. So right off the bat, for example, you kind of were getting at it. Games are becoming much more epic and cinematic. You see that reflected in my pick of the season, which is Star Wars Outlaws. So the first open world adventure set in the sci-fi franchise. We also see games becoming much more all-encompassing, offering a mix of different play styles. So like in Star Wars Outlaws, you can do everything from racing to adventure. And the other big trend we're seeing is that games like this are constantly evolving, growing, and changing over time. So they really are a gift that keeps on giving.
So Star Wars Outlaws, now when they make a game, let's talk about this. They make it for all the different systems?
So this one's actually for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series S and X, and Windows PCs. So a good mix of systems rated T for teen, so ages 13 and up. And they make it also for different play styles and interests. So if you're a beginner, no problem. You were mentioning you haven't picked up a controller. Even you could approach it. It's super fun, and there's always something to do. Of course, lifelong gamers like me, if I want to unlock all the stories and quests in the galaxy, that's no problem. So it's the type of game you really can play for weeks on end.
Wow. So Star Wars Outlaws, there's so many Star Wars fanatics out there. So what are the ratings and what are the recommendations for this game? You just said the recommendations for what systems?
Oh, yeah. So just to reiterate, T for teen, 13 and up. And what's cool about this is that you really do get to explore the galaxy from a number of different viewpoints. If you want to sneak around, pick locks. If you want to sneak your way into the Imperial strongholds, that's no problem. You can go out there and find all sorts of adventures, go at your own pace. It really lets you set the storyline. It's almost like living through a movie.
Wow, See, you're talking to somebody who just doesn't know. So let me ask you a question then. We spend money for these games. Our kids spend money. They save money. Adults spend money. Some of them are addicted. What happens when you learn how to break the system? Meaning, you know, like you've hit your levels and you're really good. What do you do with these games?
Well, that's part of the fun is learning what flies, what doesn't fly, and what you can do, and even creating your own types of adventures and experiences. The nice part is we're certainly seeing more user-generated content where fans are creating levels and options. But also, like I was getting at earlier, games like Star Wars Outlaws are constantly adding new missions, new story. You got new DLC, downloadable content that's coming in the spring as well as the recently released one, where basically you get to cross paths with legends like Lando Calrissian or even infiltrate high-stakes gambling tournaments. So to get an answer to your question, I mean, basically part of gaming's fun is that you make of it what you will. And another part of it is that these games are always changing and growing. So even once you figure out and how to master different missions, they're always adding new ones for you to learn and explore as well.
And price-wise, is this a reasonable game? I mean, I've seen games for, you know, $19.99, $29.99, $49.69. Is it reasonably priced?
Sure, yeah. It's no more expensive than any of the other major holiday releases. And actually, it's funny you should ask because there's a 25% off huge sale through December 2nd that you can find at all major retailers. You can also download digital copies of the game from Ubisoft Connect or Steam as well. So you can find a well-priced deal on it.
Okay, now I understand that there's like these open world games. Is this one of them?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So basically what it means is that you choose the storylines and quests that you want to pursue. There is a main story arc, but there's also optional ones that you can check out too. So if you want to trick out your gear so you have the better ability to hack, if you want to take your speeder bike and give it more powers, then you can go on all sorts of different adventures to do that. But if you want to skip that and stick to the main quest as well, you can absolutely do that. And you really kind of do set the pace and the type of experience that you have with each mission and storyline. Sometimes you're getting in blaster battles. Sometimes you have to be super stealthy. You really kind of pick and choose what you want to do in a game experience like this.
Wow. And actually, when I was doing some research for this, I found out that there's like a lot of different Star Wars games, and some of them are really, really hard to play.
Well, it's actually one of the longest running video game franchises or movie franchises, franchises, if I can speak, that have been converted to the video game format. The love affair that gamers have for Star Wars has been long lasting. I've been playing back since the early days of PCs and home computers up through Super Nintendo and Genesis and the like. And let me tell you, Star Wars has been a constant. But again, the nice part about it is because it's such a rich universe that has so many characters, so many stories, so much lore, so many play experiences. And again, it's becoming more accessible to players. So the nice part is you're really going to find something for just about everyone.
And besides Star Wars Outlaws, is there anything else that you find yourself playing all the time?
Absolutely. So I'm kind of a
I know you're a big kid.
The fantasy and action adventure. That's right. A 12-year-old frozen inside a 30-year-old's body. Basically, I've been playing a lot of Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown lately. So that's one where you're trying to find your way through a maze as a mystical swordsman. You have to solve puzzles, dodge traps. Also, you know, if you're looking for something to entertain the whole family, there's titles like Just Dance 2025, where you get up and shake a leg to popular hits. There's even a virtual reality version. Also, another one that movie fans might want to check out is the new Avatar game, Frontiers of Pandora. So that has missions, quests. If you want to experience moments from the films, but also try some new stuff as well, that's a great pick for sci-fi fans. But the nice part is there really is something for everybody if you're a gamer.
Okay. Now, Scott, like you just said, you're a big kid. Do you limit your game playing time? Should we as parents be looking at how much time our kids are playing games? Should we monitor it? I mean, what is some advice for safety?
Sure, absolutely. So you definitely should be aware of the games that your kids are playing and how long that they are playing them for. Doctors recommend about 60 to 120 minutes of screen time every day. But look, you can give or take. Get to know your kid if they're responsible enough and they're enjoying it. No problem. Something to keep in mind if you're a parent is that games are actually teaching you social skills, problem solving on the fly, dynamic, critical thinking. There really are many benefits to playing video games. At the same time, you also want to balance them with an equal amount or more of real life and outdoor time. So have kids get out and play, let them enjoy the experiences. But I wouldn't say we're not in the days where we're saying, oh, video games are going to make us, you know, completely socially awkward and rot our brain. No, no, no. In fact, video games really are all sorts of experiences that open us up to new interests, new avenues. Some of them are based on science, math, learning. Actually, you will find that games playing them will make your child more literate and able to think faster on their feet.
Wow. Well, since it is Monday, December 2nd, we are only have a couple hours left to get this download and this coupon. Where can we go for more information?
Sure, you can check out the game at, like I said, all major retailers, so head out if you can. You can download it on Ubisoft Connect or Steam, these digital download platforms. But at the same time, I highly recommend that you check out www.starwarsoutlaws.com as well.
Awesome. Scott, come back and join us if you have anything else fun for the holidays. We appreciate your time.
Of course, of course. Talk soon.
Let the force be with you.
Same to you. Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Also with you, right? Isn't that what they say? Hey, listeners, I wanted to get that in there. I'm sorry I couldn't have Scott on live because we had that great book interview. And speaking of interviews, in 2 weeks on December 16th, we are going to have a true American hero on board. There's a book called No Soldier Left Behind, written by Dr. Donald Steele. And it was capturing the life of a brigadier general who is amazing. And that brigadier general is going to be joining us. Veteran, it's the tale of honored veteran John J. Colhavy. And he is going to be joining us live, talking about his time in the service and the hurdles that he's overcome and family financial struggles, like we all have to deal with those. And we're going to be talking about this book and what his commitment was to leaving no soldier left behind. So that's going to be on December 16th. Next week, we're going to be back talking. We're going to have our medical minutes back next week. And we have another great show coming up, bringing cybersecurity with Chime back into the focus. So we want to make sure that we take care of making sure that you are safe when you are searching online. We do these cybersecurity series pretty much on a regular basis now because it's becoming so ridiculously crazy. And I'm so sorry that, you know, part of my interviews here on Facebook was a little bit blacked out. But when I have a pre-recorded segment, I don't have pictures to hold up and show everybody. So with that being said, I just want to share my words of wisdom for today, because I think it's really important, especially after talking to our guest, Nelson Cover, and, you know, seizing the moment. And, you know, we talked about being an author and what it takes. So with that, I don't know exactly who said this, but I want to share this saying. And it goes like this. Don't leave anything for later. Later, the coffee gets cold. Later, you lose interest. Later, the day turns into night. Later, people grow up. Later, people grow old. Later, life goes by. Later, you regret not doing something when you had the chance. Isn't that how we all kind of live our lives every day? Oh, I'll do it later. And then when later comes, your life is like over and you miss the opportunity. So seize the moment, seize the opportunity. And I just want to let everybody know that I appreciate your time here. I appreciate that you send me questions and you ask me questions all the time. We will be back next Monday, same place, same time, so that we can get our guests to tell us more about what's going on the circumstances of whatever it is that we're talking about, particularly our medical minutes. And as I always say, I like everybody to pay it forward. Please do something nice for somebody. Get out there and just be kind. The world is so angry right now that it just takes 1 minute to show a kindness, do a kindness, and just be nice to somebody. No snarkiness going on. Let's make it nice. It's the holidays, right? And let's try to carry it into the new year. Thank you so much for listening to Tell Me More. We will be back next week. And hey, thanks in the studio for putting us up live on Facebook. I appreciate you guys too. All right, over and out. We'll catch up to you later. Make it a great week.